Okay. Right, good evening all. Welcome to this OSG meeting of the 11th of February. I'd like to welcome a new member we have with us, Councillor Paul Baines. Paul recently won the ANCI by-election, so congratulations on that.
Well done.
We have a... please note this meeting will be recorded and sound recording subsequently made available via Charnwood website. In addition, please be advised that under the Openness of Local Government Bodies Regulation 2014, other people may film, record, tweet or blog from this meeting. The use of any images or sound recordings is not under the Council's control. If you have any queries about these arrangements, please speak to Democratic Services. Next one, apologies. We have Councillor Ranson sent her apologies. Councillor Brooks and Jeff Parsons is subbing for her. So we have Matthew Baines new. And yes, that's those are the only apologies and substitutions we have. The minutes of the previous meeting, I've read them. We had some discussions about them with them. Councillor Mercer and Councillor Smizovich, but we've ironed out our differences, so we will sign them as being a true record. Everybody else happy with them?
Yeah, fine.
Disclosures of personal pecuniary interests, anybody wish to make a statement?
Personal interest, please, on the
light bulb project.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, noted, thank you.
Declarations of the party whip, no declarations of whip, all right. Questions under scrutiny procedures? No, we don't have either. So we're down to item one, which is on page 9, and the purpose of that is to consider a report from the Head of Strategic and Private Sector Housing to provide an update on the implementation of light bulb service in Charnwood and to consider whether they're to continue the project. I'd like to call upon Councillor Mercer, the lead member for housing, to introduce the item, please.
Thank you. If I just give a brief summary, because you may have one or two more detailed questions, which I think Alison is probably a little bit more capable than I am in answering. What we're seeking here is simply cabinet approval to continue with light bulb. Light bulb went live in October 2017, and in Charnwood 3-4 months later in January, beginning of last year, and so far has handled over 4,000 separate cases. Where it's actually more efficient than what went before is that the occupational therapists are now concentrating on the more complex DFG cases, leaving the housing support coordinators to deal with the more minor ones, and that's made it far more efficient and more productive. So far as Charnwood is concerned, we've seen that the average time has actually dropped from 26 to 18 weeks. We've had a lot of very positive feedback from those at the receiving end. The waiting list, there will always be a waiting list because the number of cases averages 17 per week. Sometimes it's higher, sometimes it's lower. We've reduced it from 179 to 125, aiming to get it down to 100 and ultimately probably push it down to a working figure of about 50. So all in all, so far as Charnwood is concerned and Leicestershire is concerned, its light bulb is seen as a successful project. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, thanks very much, Councillor. Yes, could I call upon the Chief? Who is it, the Head of Strategic and Private Sector Housing, please? Would you like to fill in?
Okay, thank you. I think Councillor Mercer's covered the majority of what's happened in Charnwood, but I just really wanted to run through the report.
Yes.
The report provides details of the business case as a whole for the light bulb programme, and that's how it's going to be run across the county. But at the same time, when it was approved back in May 17, Cabinet requested that an internal review be carried out. So we have carried out an internal review, which is attached as Appendix 2. And that's what we think in relation to the locality model and how it's delivered in Charnwood. I won't go through the figures because Councillor Mercer's already explained about the figures and the waiting list. But I think the most important aspect of when you're looking at the benefits for residents and that every contact counts, it's between pages 61 and 66 where we've detailed three case studies. And it shows the remit of what the housing support coordinators go in and do, and holistic assessment. Sorry, Councillor Mercer doesn't like that word. But they're looking at not only the adaptations they might need, but what equipment, are they claiming their benefits, do they need any befriending, are they lonely? And it's if they've got carers, again, do the carers need any assistance? So I think the benefits to the residents are shown through those three case studies, and there's a lot more case studies I could provide, but obviously limited in relation to the report. The report also sets out the options the council needed to consider, and then details the option that I'm recommending, which is option one, and that we agree to participate for a period of 3 years with a possible extension of 2. And then it lays out all the details of the costs, etc., which are all covered through the Disabled Facility Grant capital expenditure.
Right. Thank you very much. So what we're being asked, the recommendations are that Cabinet note the implementation of the light bulb service model in Charnwood. 2, the Cabinet agree to participate in the light bulb service model for a period of 3 years and a possible 2-year extension, so that's right up to the years 2023-24. 3, that the Cabinet approve option 1 at a cost of $123,158. There are actually 3 or 4 options of finance, and this is option 1 that's being recommended, and the cost would be met through the Disability Facilities Grant. And the recommendation 4 is that if there are any significant changes of costs or government funding during the period, Charnwood's participation in the scheme will be reviewed and brought back to Cabinet. So those are the 4 recommendations that were made, and has anybody got any comments to make about them? Could I ask one, please? How carefully or precisely are the duties of the care workers laid out? You know, I can do this and I can't do that, I will do this and I won't do that.
I think just to explain, they're support workers.
Yes.
So they're going in to look at what is support is required for the families.
Yes.
There's a housing MOT which goes through every single aspect that can be considered.
Yes.
So it's quite clear as to what assessments can be carried out, and then if it needs further signposting or referral into services, that is included as well. But initially we get a referral to say, for instance, somebody can't get into a bath.
Yes.
So you'll think then we're just going for a bath walk, but when you start talking and going through the assessment, you could find out that they're not claiming all their benefits, or they're feeling lonely, or their son's caring for them but their son's ill and does he need assistance. So it widens the remit. They know what services are available, so it's like a one-stop shop. It's making sure that every contact counts, so that any service that can be brought in to assist a resident is brought in or signposted out to an agency that will come in and assist. So if, for instance, somebody, well, you find out they can't get into their bath, but they also can't carry a cup of tea across from the kitchen to their chair.
Yes.
We can order them a trolley that they can then push the trolley to their seats, they can sit down and make their own cup of tea. So it's making sure that people remain independent in their own homes.
Yes, okay, thank you. Thanks very much.
I'd like to ask a question from there. Can I ask you to just, I may have missed this in the myriad documentation, I have to say there's a lot of it, and it'd be nice to see more condensed reports, but I'm new to this, and maybe this is the
okay,
way
used
things.
To local government.
Yeah, well,
more is less, Paul.
Yeah, more is less, yeah, maybe. But can I ask you to explain why there's an 11% increase in service costs? I know you say it's to do with salary increases, but can't all be salary increases.
There's about 1.5% salary increases, isn't there?
It's salary increases and the service costs, which is what we're paid towards a Blavey in relation to the central hub. So it's not just about the overall salary costs, it's the services that they provide, like the senior role to help manage the housing support coordinators that sit within the team at Charnwood.
So there's a feeling that this is obviously different from what happened previously. Why is this now necessary when it wasn't necessary before?
If you start from the very beginning, so we go back to pre-May 17, the services the district and borough councils are responsible for is the disabled facilities grants. So we administer those, we pay the grants out, we make sure the work's completed. What this role is a combination of what the districts do and the county. So we would have provided some support when we were out there, but it wouldn't have been under our full remit. So we would have signposted people, but not to the degree that we're doing now. So what the county would have done is gone out and looked at other issues, like they might just wanted a piece of equipment. But what we've got now is we've got one member of staff or one person going to see a person, which then helps them because they've just got one person they need to link into rather than four or five different services just to make contact before they even get a service. So it was agreed as a partnership to come up with a support programme that worked not only through what the districts were doing, but what the county was doing, and provide like a one-stop shop.
So the 11% increase is a result of offloading from the county council, is that what you're saying?
No, it's not. No, it's not for offloading. It's the annual increase. Where is it in the report? Because this is what comes through from... So it's the uplift is comprised of the national salary increases and national changes to local authority grading structures, because again that's had an impact in relation to the scales that people are on and increase, and the reallocation of costs to reflect forecasted demand by borough and district, including for the central hub and operational officers. So we pay for a central hub that helps to provide the resilience to the teams on the ground, so that if there is a shortage, then we can call upon other people across the districts and boroughs to cover services.
So the big difference is about forecasting. The extent, well, you just said it's forecasted demand for this.
Yeah, the forecasted demand. Well, it's not the big difference, because for Charnwood, the demand has gone down from 26% to 24% from what the original forecast was. And then looking at the delivery over the 15 months, we've now got a forecasted demand of 24% across the county.
So where is this big difference? Whereabouts is the big difference? I'm struggling, because you said it's partly to do with forecasting, but now you're saying it's not forecasting. So I'm wondering where the big difference is coming from, really. The big variation.
I don't understand.
Well, you said there's an 11% difference between this
increasing costs.
And you say 1% of that is salary increase. Mm. And then you went through a few things that you said was the other 10%.
No, the 11% is the whole. Yeah, all those things lead into it.
So what is that 10% then? So what's the difference between the 10% before and now? Where's it coming from?
It's just increased costs from the central hub in relation to services that are provided, and like I explained, the grading structures and the national increase for salaries. So it's a combination of everything added together.
If I may, I don't think the pay rise is 1%. I think it's more. Because the local authority pay structure has changed this year, and although it's only, I think it's 2% overall, but the lower grades is quite a lot more. Can't remember how much more, but here it's several percent, isn't it? Looking at Simon.
It is, but it might be more in other authorities depending on where they were, because our it's quite a few percentage here, and our pay scales were adjusted. So some 3 years ago at the bottom end of the living wage, so it could easily be sort of 11-12% of the lower graded staff.
I don't think we've got a complete breakdown of that, but no, some of the lower graded staff will have been receiving, say, 7 or 8% pay rise to bring them into line with the new national structure, something of that order, and that will account for some of it. And then I think what Alison's saying is there's some more management overhead in the hub.
My next question would be,
why do we need that new centralisation when we didn't need it before?
Is that explained in the business case?
That is explained in the business case, and in the very first one, we received as the county a $1 million transformation grant. I can't remember where it was from now, but from the Department of Communities and Local Government, to look at how we could pull together not only support but the health, because this is all linking into healthcare and support, to reduce the cost of people going into hospital, people needing extra care and support in the homes because they can remain living independently.
Yeah.
So that was the whole focus for the driver for it. So the £1 million was used to try various pilots, and this was one of the pilots that was taken forward, and this was the one that was agreed as a partnership to go forward with. There's a number of these across the country, different versions but very similar in relation to how they're providing services jointly.
So at a strategic level, you've got savings being made by encouraging people to stay in their homes rather than to sit in a hospital, and that's where the funding from central government is going from, and that's quite significant. It's also obviously very beneficial to those people because somebody knows you're just as likely to get ill in a hospital as to recover from being ill in a hospital.
Yes.
and also because it's a new scheme, you can't get it absolutely right in the first place. So there's been a number of teething problems which aren't detailed in this, but nothing was ever going to be absolutely right in the first place. So the other part of that reflects the fact there have been a number of changes, and perhaps they were not charmed, but perhaps in Blaby they were a little bit optimistic at first, and that reflects that was always going to happen. It's a natural thing. And it's just a matter of coming to terms with it and getting on with something that, as we say, is delivering a far more effective, efficient service, and critically getting people sorted out a lot quicker.
So okay. the detail of that, just to point to that, sorry Chair, if you look at page 41, I think that's where the explanation in the business case is. It says that option one of the business case shows the indicative additional contributions required from partners to meet the proposed increases of 11%. This percentage covers rises to reflect basic salary increases, doesn't give a percentage there, and overheads of around 11% on average, which takes into account any increments and the already agreed pay award alongside additional cost of delivery. But I don't believe there's a breakdown of those in an elemental way in that business. I think that's probably all we've been supplied with by the
by okay, the I think that's board. A reasonable answer, but I also think it was a reasonable question because the headline in the press says 1 to 1.5% increase of your local government, but obviously it's not. Councillor Parsons.
Thank you. A couple of points. It's around the same sort of area, but coming from a slightly different direction from the previous questioning. I'm scratching my brain and looking through notes previously because I think I scrutinised the first light bulb paper that came to us. I can't remember when exactly, but I think I was there when we scrutinised that paper. Just in terms of a couple of issues. The first is I'm very slightly nervous of creating something that we can't say no to in future. So when, let's just say, next year comes back and there's another unexpected 10% rise or there's an unexpected cost increase, we're not in a position to say no, because I completely support the strategic headline that you've just made. I understand it's saving money in the overall game.
Yes.
Get that from a starting point. I'm very slightly concerned that we create something which isn't target driven and measured. I'm looking at the performance tables on 67, 68, 69, and I can see numbers of outputs. I can't see targets against which they're performing. And I'm just slightly nervous of creating something, given the current financial climate, which we won't be able to say no to next year if it comes back for more money. For reasons which may seem reasonable on the surface, without performance targets associated with it. I'm struggling in the context of the paper, it might be my omission, to find performance targets as opposed to outputs, which 67, 68, 69 gives me ongoing future performance targets, which we could then justify saying no to if we didn't want to give additional funding because we feel it's underperformed. Because the overall principles, everything this does, I very much support, but I'm scared of creating a vehicle which then can just gently take money from us because we put ourselves in a position we can't say no because it's so good and it's the right thing and it wants another $20,000 and another 10 and another 10 and we end up having to say yes every time. And I always feel nervous when I feel forced into those issues, and I'm a little bit wary of it on that front. And whether we can push back a little bit about, well, can we see some target driven criteria in some way, which lends itself to our funding in future.
Okay. Yes, good point.
Yeah, in relation to the disabled students grant, there is a target which we've hit. So that was the target for 18 weeks. So we've hit that, but that we're not going to be complacent. We need to carry on, and we need to still tighten up that process. The housing support coordinators, from memory, and I can't find the page, it's typical when I've got the report in front of me, but is to see somebody within 2 to 3 weeks. Now, our oldest applicant on the register at the moment is December, so we're not hitting that target, hence the reason why, as Councillor Mercer's already said, we want to get to a target of 50, because then we think that's a manageable one so that we can hit the 2 to 3 weeks with the number of staff we've got. So we have got targets in place in relation to that. People living independently, with the number of referrals we've got through, the targets is the satisfaction of the people and the fact that they're remaining at home. So for me, for Charnwood, I'm looking at obviously improving DFGs, regardless to what's in the business case, I still want to get that lower, and to get to our waiting list for housing support coordinators. So even if the business case has a target, I will be setting my own targets for our service, because we're a locality team, to ensure that we are benefiting from this process. And that will be set. Whether that gives you enough reassurance, I don't know. But as far as charges, that is why we've got recommendation 4, because if there is a significant increase in costs, or the government does stop funding the disabled facility grant like they do now, then we will be reviewing it. So I'd expect to be in the same position in October, November next year, to be doing an internal review to make sure that we're still doing what we expect to get out of this.
Councillor Mercer, you wanted to add something?
Alison has already said it. It's recommendation 4 is the key one, which I think reflects exactly the point that you were making, that we're not giving an open-ended commitment to this, and we're saying it's got to be justified in terms of providing value for money, actually getting the job done, and having a sound business case, which is why, as I say, the 4th recommendation is there.
And the other aspect as well is the annual, as part of the annual budget process, that will be included in that, and I'm sure Councillor Barclay will be questioning if we are putting in, say, a 25% increase on the light bulb, because that is not what we intend to do.
Yes.
Where will the light bulb come back for scrutiny? Remind me where it can come back for scrutiny. So we have a person on the board of the governance of it.
Yeah, I'm on the board
of the governance. Where will that come back for scrutiny? Where will it reappear in the scrutiny cycle?
If the agreement is for 3 years, then it would be as part of the annual review. We've already been to performance scrutiny once for me to explain the performance. So it could come every 6 months to performance scrutiny. That could be included in the timetable, so we can do that to show what's happening in relation to the waiting list, whether we're getting value for money. Obviously, part of the budget setting, again, that will be scrutinised through budget scrutiny. So there's lots of mechanisms in place that can scrutinise it, but if this is agreed for 3 years, obviously it won't come back to Cabinet until that point to go further, and then obviously it could still go through a performance scrutiny before it went to this meeting, before it goes back to Cabinet.
Right, I'm loath to burn performance scrutiny without their pre-knowledge, and I'm sure it'll go to SNB at some point for discussion.
It will come up on the work programme.
But it needs looking out for in the budget cycle as well. Mm. It needs to be kept on in the budget cycle.
And I think they are aware of costs. I mean, the option 1 is the one that's been chosen. There's option 2 is the same price but with another admin worker, and that's been vetoed, hasn't it?
Well, it's an office manager to manage the admin. Yes, we've got our own admin. We manage our admin, so therefore,
Can I just make another comment on scrutiny changes? Because although it's not happened yet, there's a recommendation made to council about the structure of scrutiny, so there'll be a different shape. So it'll be the new scrutiny bodies, and I imagine this would fall under the directorate model for housing. So if that scrutiny body decides it wants to regularly monitor this particular topic, it would simply add it to the work programme, as well as any kind of specific budgetary issues that may or may not come up in future years. But there won't be a performance panel in the new arrangement, it will be up to the individual scrutiny body to do that. So you might want to think about, or that committee might want to think about when it gets there, what actual performance monitoring it wishes to do.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Councillor Mercer said part of my question. Value for money. Are the staff of Lightbulb or the people that work for them, are they monitored, you know, on a spot check to see how they are doing to give us value for money?
The housing, Charnwood, when they went to Cabinet in May 17, agreed that they wanted their own locality team. So we've actually employed the staff. So I have three housing support coordinators, a technical officer, half an admin person, to actually make this happen. And they are monitored, hence the report where it's got 68, 69 and 70, the ones that Councillor Parson referred to. That shows where we're monitoring it on a regular basis to see how many assessments have been completed.
When the person, the carer or the nurse comes, you have someone physically there to see?
No, we don't do that. We're going out to assess what support is required. If care's put in, that would be down to the County Council to monitor the care.
Right.
That is not part of the role. It's about the support to help somebody to maintain and sustain their independence.
Yeah, and we take the word of the County Council to say we're getting value for money.
Well, we can see from the case studies that of the visit that's gone out that we're getting value for money for our residents because of the services they're getting. So we can monitor it through that side, as well as the number of visits that they're doing and the assessments they're completing, and obviously ensuring that we're spending our disabled facility grant.
Okay.
So the Lightbulb project, you seem to be saying that assesses what is required, but we don't actually employ the staff that give the care.
We don't employ the staff that give the care.
So
we arrange for the grants.
Yes.
And we do that process, and we can signpost people into services, and we order the equipment, but we don't provide the care.
So the staff that actually go into the home aren't directly reportable to us?
No.
Okay, thank you.
Just got one more point linking to the same point I raised earlier. So can I just wish, is this a statutory requirement on us?
The disabled facility grant is, yes.
So when we say we'll review it, we don't like the cost increase. Going back to my point, the problem I perceive is that we will have to put in place an alternative because it's a statutory function. So again, it's just that I know we've got the issue in, and I realise clause 4, recommendation 4 is trying to cover that aspect. But again, I just keep getting a slightly nervous twitch in the back of my hackles about just creating an open-ended pot, because if it's a statutory service and we say after a year, God, look, they've put the bill up 20%, we can't afford to withdraw because we're going to have to put in a replacement service anyway because it's statutory.
We're providing the service as a locality team, and if we decided we didn't want to be part of the Lightbulb, we wouldn't then stop doing the disabled facility grants because the statutory duty is with the Borough Council, so we would carry on providing that service. The bit that we wouldn't provide is the other aspect to it. We still do the signposting and the support where we could, but we wouldn't do any of the other aspects to it that the county...
Which are non-statutory.
Which are county's statutory duties, which is why they put in funding into the scheme as well.
Okay. So the option for us is not whether we do it, how we do it.
Yes.
We've always done this, and in fact if we go back 5 years or less, actually if we go back a few years, the council, this council as a statutory provider of disabled facilities grants, was underfunded by the government for that for many, many years, and has always topped them up. And the other way that this is managed is the right language, is that the flow of actual work is slowed a bit because there's a time window in which it can be done to match the availability of resources. So I think the resources problem has pretty much gone now from government's policy on DFGs. There's enough money to fund it all, but it's always open to each provider, each housing authority, how they actually go about doing that. So if we wanted to run our disabled facilities programme as Charnwood Borough Council, as a housing authority, fulfilling its statutory duties, nothing to stop us, we would simply withdraw from the light bulb project and say that's what we're going to do, maybe because we think that's more efficient or better value for money, or we get a higher quality of service. Yeah. We could make those choices. That was the choice that Cabinet made, basically, to join a year ago. We can make the decision to depart if we feel that the circumstances are such that we should. I think that's the point of these reviews, is to demonstrate that it is actually worthwhile continuing to participate. But if members feel, or officers feel, having looked at it, that it's no longer value for money and there's actually a cheaper, more efficient way for us to do it, then it would be quite remiss not to actually look at that.
So if we could just bring it back into house,
bring it back as we did in the past, yeah.
Because with the seven districts and boroughs, we've only got one borough, which is us, that's running our own locality team. Everyone else has given their statutory duty for the DFG provision to Blakely. Well, we haven't. We've kept that. So if we decided to opt out, we wouldn't be opting out of our statutory duty, we'd be opting out of the extra.
Councillor Bain?
I wonder what the cost would be. I suspect it will be a lot more, but what would be the cost if we decided to run this ourselves?
We would only do our statutory duty for the DFGs. The rest, because of the way that the county has funded this, I would foresee that going into the Blakely Central Hub.
But there won't be an enormous difference, because most of this money, you've got to keep sight of, the Disabled Facilities Grant primarily pays for the work that is done in the property. So if there's an administrative system that organises that work, it still costs the same amount of money to have a typical thing, stair lift or downstairs toilet, whatever that may be, the cost is the cost. And that's where most of the money has always gone. Mm. The other cost is the overhead of actually managing that and managing the works themselves, and which can come from the Safe Facilities Grant. So what you're talking about is that overhead layer, that management process, not so much the cost of the work itself. Mm-hmm. And I say I don't think that would automatically change or dramatically change. Whoever actually managed that would still get the same builders giving the same quotes.
So what you're saying is it's money in, money out, and what we need to do is maximise customer satisfaction.
Mm. There's satisfaction and just efficiency of delivery, I think. You know, the point of the Lightwood project was it would bring everything together. Although Disabled Services Grant is the biggest element by far, in fact the only element that we do as a district council, it's the fact that we can actually, for the residents, bring other agencies, primarily the county council, but there are others, into that equation and then get a customer satisfaction, if you like, from the fact that the resident is getting a single point of contact who's sorting all these things out, the main one being the adaptations, but getting all the things done at the same time, as Alison's alluded to, and not actually claiming the right benefits or understanding what the entitlements are, that kind of advice service, which isn't part of the BFG, but it is part of the LIPL.
Yes, I think the main question that goes through my mind is how much is Charnwood getting out of this? Are we giving a better service to our residents? And is it cost effective? Then I heard a little while ago, I think Councillor Mercer said that the number of outstanding cases of Charnwood have come down from 172 to 125. By the end of March this year, we're hoping to have them down to about 100. Looking on page 34, there's a table there, and that's showing HSC case delivery times. The average is 36, Charnwood is 93. Is that to do with the backlog that we brought over when we joined? Or?
Yeah, that's exactly to do with the backlog.
Is it? Okay.
Yes, it is. And that's where, like I said, now we're the oldest case we've got is December. So although it's not within the 2 to 3 weeks, we're a lot closer than where we were when we started.
And we're aiming for what? What's our targets?
2 to 3 weeks to turn them around. And we want to get the waiting list down to 50, which will then be manageable over 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay, thanks very much.
I think my message, Chair, I know you'll take that responsibility. I think as OSG, our message to Cabinet is to ensure that they are comfortably satisfied.
Yes.
In terms of the ability to say no if they so chose to do so, given the reports, and that I think we flagged the issues that are probably of most concern yeah. here. The cabinet to keep an eye on.
Well, we will make. I will make the point for the report to cabinet. I mean, I take it that apart from that, everybody agrees with the four recommendations, but with the caveats that have been brought up.
Could I just add up? I think you're absolutely right in saying we need to be cynical about this and objective about this. But having seen the process take place, I was more than impressed at the rigour that our strategic director Eileen Mann applied to actually looking at the case for this and to see that it was actually in our best interest to take part, but also to say that at any stage in the future, if it wasn't acting in our interest, then we would withdraw. So I totally agree and sympathise with the point that you're making, and that point will be borne in mind in the future if I'm still around.
Okay, so to sum it up, the four recommendations were the Cabinet to note the implementation, review the performance, Cabinet to agree to participate in the model for the next for a period of 3 years with a possible 2 year extension. I think that's the point where we really need to review the costs and the operation. And Cabinet to approve the option one at a cost of $123,000, that's to get it off the ground. And then four, if there are any significant changes of costs or government funding, then Charles' participation in the scheme will be reviewed and brought back to Cabinet. I think with the exception where they were with the warning though, to Cabinet to keep an eye on costs and operation, I think we can recommend those four options.
Yeah.
Everybody?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks very much indeed.
Phew.
Thanks very much, Alison. Thank you, Paul. Right, item two, it's on page 81 on the tablets. Is to consider a report from the Head of Finance and Property Services which considers the capital strategy for 2019-20. And I'd like to call upon the Member Councillor Barclay to introduce the item.
Yeah, this is a recent requirement for us as a council to have a capital strategy. A lot of what's contained within it was already in place. We're drawing it together. You've seen Appendix B, there is specifically the treasury management strategy that we have. In essence, it's looking at the overall control of our capital expenditure, how we govern that, how we decide on capital expenditure, if we decide to borrow to finance capital expenditure, what limits we go to. In the treasury management, we hold at times up to £63 million worth of money, how we invest that, what indicators we use. We also we use a company called Link Asset Management to make sure that we are kept up to date with both global and local strategies. You will see in the treasury management strategy the sort of criteria we use on our investment, which companies we can use on a year, 6 months, 5 years and the rest of it. So in essence, it also views going forward, we'll be looking at commercial investments on how we can maximise use of any money we hold, making sure that we take a prudential view to it, that it is affordable, that the capital cost of borrowing charges against, if it's on the general fund, is against the revenue budget, and make sure that we're not over stretching it. If we go into commercial investments, as some councils have, the one we're looking at the risk, because security liquidity and capital certainty are fairly high on our list of priority. We can't afford, we can't go into this sort of thing willy-nilly without being aware of the risk. Now, all that having been said, we have a need to increase our income, our funding has come down, and we will be risk aware rather than risk averse. I think you'll see by looking around some of the councils in the country, some of them have gone into huge, we won't be doing this, we've gone into huge shopping centres and all sorts of things like that, which is fine. The sort of catch-all there is that after 5 years, if the capital value of those investments has come down, you have to take that as a direct hit on your balance sheet, and something like that could really have a significant, you know, if you've gone into a 200 million Shires shopping centre, and well, it'll be a lot more than that, but something like that, and you take a £20 million hit, that comes straight off the revenue budget, and you've got a precept, and all I would say is if we had to do something like that, our council tax might have to rise quite a lot, and we'd be having a referendum anyhow, but we could get into a real jam. But the other part of this is that we need to make sure that our officers have the skill to deal with this, and if they don't have the skill, that we get sufficient advice to enable us to make an informed decision. And that's really what the report is about, and it lays out quite clearly what our parameters are, what things we would have to consider, and making sure that we have the skill base to deal with it, because you know that in local government is not the same environment as out in the commercial world. You could well ask yourself that, you know, we will look very, very carefully at anything we're doing, and it will be subject to a huge evaluation, because you've got to ask yourself the question, as a council, we decide to do something, why have people out in the commercial sector not already decided to do that and taken the opportunity? But we have taken some decisions. We've invested in property funds, and it's worked well. We've invested in local government bonds, but we're now looking at ways of increasing our income even further. I'll leave it at that.
Thank you very much. Strategic Director, do you want to add to that?
Just to reiterate, it is principally a drawing together of our existing documentation. One thing that's probably new in the report, which we are asking Cabinet to approve to recommend to Council, is around the minimum revenue provision, which is quite a technical matter. It's sort of akin to depreciation on property. Maybe the difference is that it does or can potentially give rise to a charge against budget. So it would actually be a real impact on our ability to budget going forward. That is on sort of on page 102 on the 102 on the tablets. It's page 7 of the actual treasury management aspect of it. So there is, if you did want some more detail on that, I could explain it. It's mainly something that could happen if and when we decided to borrow against a general fund. It's not something that applies to the housing revenue account, where you may know that we've borrowed £79 million around to sort of finance the to buy ourselves out of the housing subsidy arrangement and invest in decent homes. So it doesn't actually apply to the HRA, but it would apply to the general fund if we were going to borrow. So that's probably the principal new element within what you've got. And then the other thing to say, really, there are the capital strategy does sort of set a direction. It is an annual document, and we would expect it to evolve, and the document does include reference to investment properties, potential loans to third parties, and development of subsidiaries such as the housing development company that you may recall going to Cabinet quite recently. And in those situations, if, as and when we decided to do something, they would be the subject of separate Cabinet reports and Council reports if they were to happen within the year. Otherwise, they were potentially things that would be coming into next year's strategy. So what I'm saying there is, if we are going to do any of these activities that Councillor Barclay was explaining, there would be quite a lot of decisions to make. they are quite technical and require expert advice, but we would be bringing those to Cabinet and Council as separate reports to make sure they've got suitable visibility in the first instance if we decide to embark on such activities.
Thank you very much. Right, just to reiterate the recommendations in the packs here to Cabinet, that the strategy be approved and recommended, that the Treasury Management Strategy Annual Investment and Minimum Revenue Provision be approved, and that the Prudential and Treasury Indicators be approved and recommended. So bear that in mind in the discussions. Does anybody want to start off?
I have a couple of questions. I'm just sort of seeking a bit of reassurance really over a couple of issues. So I sense whilst this is coming together with a number of things, there is also a bit of new space being created here in terms of us being able to operate commercially, which I'm very comfortable with. I recognise the need and understand that. And I made the point in the pre-meeting to other members here that this wasn't just a rehashing of the old, this is a framework to move things on. And we need to be aware and cognizant of that. I'm slightly nervous and I'm not sure that I have read it in the papers to understand it completely. I'm very slightly nervous of money moving from Treasury outside into a commercial vehicle. So we loan money from Treasury into a commercial vehicle, which takes that money outside of the guise of Treasury management, where the rules are relatively well established at the moment. I've tracked through and taken an interest in Treasury management over the last couple of years. So we can move money outside of that world, and we might be generating revenue for general funds. I want to make sure that we don't then treat that asset that we've purchased, whatever that might be, and then borrow against it. Because I want to make sure the governance prevents us from borrowing against it. Because that would take a double hit if that asset zeroed. We'd have lost the money from Treasury, and if we had the ability, not that we would, but if we had the ability to borrow against it, we'd have lost twice. And I want to make sure that the governance around anything we do is tight enough. So I reference in the document that it sort of alludes to the fact that governance will be on a case-by-case basis. But I would want Cabinet to reassure us very strongly that we won't double dip. If we take money from Treasury over here, we lend 10 million to whatever, we then borrow against it because it's now outside of the Treasury envelope and we have no flexibility. So we now borrow against it. And the temptation might come in the reverse of what Tom's just referenced. But the temptation might come when the asset value's increased, not when it's gone down. But the asset value might increase and it might be sitting there looking quite sexy for the next one, and we start to borrow against an asset that's outside Treasury's constraints. So I'm slightly concerned that we have some reassurance from Cabinet that the governance will not allow that to happen, that we won't double borrow against the same asset, having lent money from Treasury that's now outside the envelope and now borrowed against the asset value.
Yeah, I think I can probably answer that. I mean, the 63 million that we hold as a sort of reserve, it goes between 30, 63 million, and that isn't actually our money.
No, I don't understand.
And we have a cash flow. So the whole point of this is we have to be able, when the county comes to us and say, right, can we have 30 million of that now? Now, we want it now. That will go to them. In honesty, I don't see us to any greater. We could borrow internally to a certain amount. Certainly, we won't be doubling borrowing because any money we any money that we take from the sort of the cash flow, we are subject to a demand on that at fairly short notice. So we're very aware of that. We could borrow against it because it's a revolving circle. Would we, having borrowed the money to purchase an asset, and that would show in our balance sheet, then go out and borrow again? The answer is no, certainly not what I mean, we won't be doing that. I can quite categorically state that. Unfortunately, although you take the hit if it goes down, you can't write it up into the balance sheet. In other words, if it goes up by 20 million, you can't suddenly create a 20 million reserve. Well, you could do a revaluation, but it's not cash. But what is the point I was trying to make to you is that, yeah, the governance here governs the Treasury Management Strategy, how we do what the capital maximum capital financing requirements. So it really, really does boil down into exactly those things that you were concerned about. And I can understand your concerns. Well, we certainly won't be doing that. It would be ludicrous to do that. Because it's all about saying you go to one bank to borrow the money to buy the asset and then go to another bank when it's gone up, so borrow some more money. We just haven't got that. We haven't got the money to do that. We may end up going out into the market and borrowing money to invest in that asset. But again, that's pretty rigorously controlled, because never mind the minimum revenue position, the depreciation, there's a real cost for that borrowing, which we have to charge to our revenue account and preset the taxpayers for. So it's got the income, has got to cover any cost of borrowing plus a margin. I understand your concerns. I think our governance procedures are fairly tight. What we can actually invest our money in, yes, it is widening, but it is still fairly prescriptive in what we do with that $63 million.
And I guess that has to be carefully managed, because the liquidity, again, we're cautious and I'm sure we wouldn't do it, but were the police, the fire brigade, to call on all their money in one instant?
Yeah.
If we had invested treasury money in assets, yeah, the only way we could create that liquidity would be to borrow against it,
yeah,
which is the point I'm concerned about.
Yeah.
So that,
yeah,
that anything crossing from treasury into,
yeah,
the new middle ground we're creating, I'm extremely cautious about, yeah, making sure that that balance of liquidity is available, yeah, into treasury were the demand made. And then once it's outside the treasury envelope, it's the governance doesn't allow us to borrow again against it.
I think you find that is the case within here. The actual policy states that our priority is security, liquidity and capital certainty.
Yeah, no, I understand.
And
I see that
the point you make about
the governance reassurance, because the governance isn't there yet.
No, the government says it in here. All the indicators and everything else cover exactly that scenario. I mean, common sense dictates you wouldn't double borrow it. If we just wouldn't do it. And it is fairly tightly written within the Treasury Management Strategy of exactly what we can in and cannot invest in. And it is, if you to do that, it's at your own peril. You just wouldn't do it. A commercial business wouldn't do it. We wouldn't do it. We're far more risk aware and probably risk aware and risk averse than most commercial organisations. We can't go and lose money. We just haven't got the capacity to do that. We'd have to go to the taxpayer to make up a loss of $20 million if we did that. The scenario I painted for you, you can imagine that anything that comes to the council for an investment like that will be hugely appraised. It is the responsibility of Cabinet. They would have to apply these. The officers, the Section 151 officer, has a responsibility to hold up the red card and stop us doing anything like that. Irrespective of this Treasury Management, if that is the whole point of having a Section 151 officer, if we Cabinet suddenly decided they wanted to give each Cabinet member a gold bar, this is the man who can stop it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, theoretically, we should have in
here... Good time.
No, but theoretically, you could write in here, well, we're going to award $10 million to each Cabinet member. And I'm sure they'll pay interest. But, you know, there are stocks and balances. And
It's true.
You know, you can go to the nth degree, but within as much as possible, this locks us in pretty tightly to what we can and cannot do. And I think there will be a great deal of nervousness, because there will be more than enough people out there, not only out there in the public, but also within the council, who will be waiting with mallets to, if it went wrong, to take us to pieces. Not that that would help, so the best thing is get it right in the first time.
Are you happy with that answer, Jeff?
Yeah, I have a view from what I've read,
yes,
everything I've read, so I have a view in terms of what I perceive is that each thing, each investment,
yes,
each brick, the governance for each new commercial thing,
correct,
has to be done. And when each new commercial thing is done,
yes,
I would want to be very, very clear that we, via scrutiny, keep a very tight look,
correct,
and continue to be vigilant. We have the ability,
yeah,
from audit from seeing the Treasury papers, which as I say, I take an interest in, and hence tonight, and wanting to make sure that in each individual case, the governance around that is tight enough. I'm all in favour of the principle, all in favour of it, understand it, definitely agree on Tom's point about upskilling in terms of making commercial decisions to make money, to bring in revenue, to help give more to our residents. Absolutely in favour of all of that. The backstop of that is also the backstop, bad word, is to then make sure that the governance is appropriate to protect our residents and to protect our money. We can lose money, commercial, it happens, but the reality is we can still do a lot around that and make sure that we're covered. It's our job to scrutinise that. That's our job.
Can I make one more point? There is a report to the council three times a year on exactly how a treasury management strategy is working. So where something horrible to happen, it would be flagged up.
Very clear.
All right. So it come up pretty quickly. So it's incumbent on. I can't stress how much it's quite a serious responsibility. If you're going to take a commercial investment decision, there's no guarantee it's right. Nobody in the world can promise you that. But you know, we've got to look at it and within common sense boundaries and be sure that what we're going into, the people who are advising us have got knowledge of the market and that the economic outlook and everything else is such that if we're going into it on a long-term basis, within all reasonable parameters, those risks have been taken into account.
Thank you.
And Councillor Taylor. Yeah, I totally agree with Councillor Potts and also Tom and Simon's answers back to that. And yeah, like we just use the word, we touch on people's experience of the markets, whatever, they change weekly at the minute.
Mm-hmm.
And so I totally agree with all that. And I think looking at the risk management, the things that you've covered in there, that air of caution really is there. And it has been captured. And again, there's a document three times a year, as you say, that to highlight these risks. And I think it was a good point. Because again, it's not an unreasonable thing that in the future that may happen.
You're right. I mean, who would have thought that the retail in the high street would collapse to the extent it does?
Exactly.
What is the net impact? But also, we would have to manage the amount we put into any one thing. So we would not go headlong and say, right, we haven't got enough money to get saved. The Cabinet would decide that. What proportion of our total money we're investing in this? Look at it as a worst case scenario. Where are we to lose this, or 50%, 60%?
Where's that money coming from?
Where are we going to make it? And if we lost everything in it, and that's not, God forbid that should ever happen, but those are the sort of questions that we will be asking. And you know, you can't shy away from it. If you're going to do these sort of things, there is a risk, and it's being risk aware rather than risk averse, and using to the best of everybody's ability, you know, making sure we're not putting all our eggs in one basket, that we spread the risk, and that you know, we will be accountable for what we do very, very clearly.
And again, Tom, on there, Simon, the risks have been identified, and also there's clearly in there where we can invest on the terms and whatever that through an organisation where we've got that element of security, that's a risky word.
We will use advisors who've got far more knowledge than me, or, you know, it's no good saying that we're going to invest in the pharmaceutical industry, bring it to Cabinet and say, is there anybody there who knows anything about the pharmaceutical industry? No. And therefore, the first question you'd ask is, well, how does this stack up? Have we, what advice have we taken? As we do with link asset management, you know, we get daily indicators on what's happening in the market, so that our money is safe. We will take it. They move, whether it's sort of red, green, or amber, that moves, and we move our money to go along with that. And particularly in a climate that we're in now, everything is very, very
amber.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
Ish.
Yeah,
it is.
But rest assured, there is a genuine responsibility. You know the financial position of the council. Sometimes you do have to take outside advice. I'm not going to sit here and pretend to you that Cabinet has the knowledge to do some of these things without outside advice, because they don't.
And again, I'll just finish it off, Chair. Within that report that I, you know, that we've got in front of us, it clearly identifies all those risks.
Yeah, it does.
You know, captured where all the markets are affected and whatever. And really, I think it's an excellent report.
It's very interesting. It really is.
Yeah,
it is.
Cool. I'm really concerned about the potential drop in retail, as you said. 250,000 jobs, according to the government, this year up to now, which is which sounds to me like the beginning of a seriously difficult trend. Obviously, that would mean we'd lose business rates, income, which would change the nature of how much we can actually invest and how much we need to borrow. I'm just wondering the extent to which we've taken a full account of that. But allied to this question, so I'd like to answer that if possible. Allied to this, you said we wouldn't want to invest in a shopping centre. I can see that given that what we've just said, that's very true. But we're ideally located to invest in the infrastructure associated with e-commerce, distribution centres and that sort of thing. And certainly other councils have done that to some degree. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are around those things.
Well, I agree. Now, what can I do about what happens to business rates? Well, I can ask the government, to boost the high street. We've got a strategy. We're trying to improve our high street within Loughborough, within Charnwood. What that is something which you have a little control on. Business rates is particularly sensitive. You know that the government is actually looking to move funding away from providing funding centrally towards on a more localised basis, where we retain, we've just had a pilot where we've been chosen to retain 70% of the business rates, but that 75% of the business rates, but it actually doesn't work quite like that, because that makes good headline figures, but actually when it boils down to it, we retain 50% at the moment, and actually that for Charnwood means we have 9%, because the rest goes to Leicestershire Fire Police and Leicestershire County Council. Have I given thought to that? Yes, certainly I have. When you look at our collection account, and we are in a rates pool to make sure that ebbs and flows like that do get balanced out. But in a meltdown scenario where it would be very, very difficult, but that's why we are in a rates pool, where we're this top up and tariffs, and there's a group of us, of councils within Leicestershire, where we work it out. So I have thought of that. Have I thought about e-commerce? I've thought about it, and you're right, distribution e-commerce is the way forward. Is there opportunities for us? Well, all I'd say is we will consider anything. You get places like Amazon, which has made a thumping loss for many, many years, and huge capital investment. So these are the sort of things we'd be looking at. But yeah, I definitely, what you said is on the radar. Very, very aware of that. Also very aware of the uncertainties when the Fair Funding Review comes forward at the end of this year, of the reallocation of money. Now, we've talked earlier in the evening about social care and adult social care. My perception is that there will be a chunk of money go towards that, because unfortunately we have an ageing population and that isn't going to go away. So there is going to be a redress. It comes back to your first point, is what are we doing to help ourselves? We know that funding is going to go down. This is what we're going to do. So it's a double-edged sword. What you want is you want capital certainty, security, liquidity and more income. Well, you're not going to get it without taking some sort of risk. And the risks that we take in terms of would we invest in e-commerce, the right thing came along, yes, of course we would. I don't want to second guess what would happen. I think it will be subject to scrutiny. Anything that comes through Cabinet is subject to heavy scrutiny, and I think the benefit of the scrutiny, genuinely, I think the benefit of the scrutiny system is we have people who have knowledge in different areas, and it would may even, if we have a scheme, we may decide to call it into this very group.
Maybe just as a context, if we just reflect on the investment in property funds. So we made that, we sort of identified the opportunity, and what we did there was engage some professional advice. We arranged a day for some experts to come up and tell us about property funds, and then we went, then there was a report to Cabinet and Council, I believe, that which sort of discussed these, outlined the decisions we made, and that went through. So we did sort of consult, we did go through quite a rigorous internal process, and we did, and it did go through Cabinet and Council and had quite a lot of scrutiny. And I think that sort of process is what we would be looking to do with these new opportunities as they come forward, and and as we sort of agreed the policies, we would then bake those into the capital strategy. So the day we actually had, so we had some fund managers come up and speak to us, so leading to the what would we specifically invest in. So the sentiment around retail was actually very negative. We did invest in one fund that did have a significant-ish retail holding, and what they owned actually was half of Covent Garden. So the last shops in the UK will be those ones in Covent Garden.
That's true.
But generally, we had another group came and talked about and some shopping centres in sort of Swansea and Preston, I think they were, which sounded less attractive. So we didn't invest in those areas. And on the converse of the sentiment around the warehouse, what they call industrials, but actually it's not aluminium smelting plants, it's the sort of sheds like Roxhill and Magna Pop, and that's very positive. But if we were to invest in investment property and invest in property more directly, which does have a higher risk, a higher return, I think we'd be looking to make sure that we didn't do something like spend £20 million on the Rushes, and that we did invest sensibly and took appropriate professional advice, which I would then anticipate would go through the boards. Committees like this would have the chance to look at it, but so the point is we would look at this carefully, go through the process. Ultimately though, there is a risk, and we could lose money, but I think the sort of backstop of this is we'd be looking to make sure that if things did go wrong, it would be something manageable within the context of the council's reserves and financing. Yep. So that's the context.
I think as a section one finance officer,
I think it's to say that, I mean, nothing stays the same. We live in a changing world, don't we? Mm. When I was reading from page 127, I see that we've got £5 million invested in property.
Yeah.
I was reading the Times on Saturday. It said the chief city watchdog has been monitoring the daily outflows from property funds amid the fears that Brexit could trigger an exodus of money similar to the one in the EU referendum 2016. Morning Star, a fund research group, said that investors pulled out more than £250 million out of UK property funds in December, the biggest outflow since June 2016. So we really have to keep our eye on it. Things don't stay the same forever.
I think, Chair, you'll find that that's true. Overseas investors, particularly in the London property market,
yes,
are various global,
very volatile.
The pound is, it was down,
yes,
and investors were actually taking the opportunity to come into a falling market with a low cost of coming into it. But yeah, absolutely right. I think there's a huge amount of uncertainty about what we know there is about Brexit. We spent the day with these property managers, and it was fairly intense. And Link Asset Management, our advisors, set us up with various people. And I don't want to second guess it, but it's worked quite well for us so far. And stop reading the Times, Chair.
We'll go to the Mirror, shall we?
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. It exemplifies the point exactly.
Yes.
Just a specific couple of points. Can I get you to look at page 104? On certainly what I'm looking at, so it's 104. I think it's just page 9 in the bottom right hand corner. It starts 3.2 Treasury indicated limits to borrowing activity. Can I just clarify exactly what I'm looking at? just for my own benefit, because I'm unclear. When I, are you there? Sorry.
Yeah, I'm there. Yeah.
When I look at the 96 million of the authorised debt limit, 18-19.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that's approved already, because we wouldn't be approving that in the January 19, February 19, would we? That 96 limit for 18-19 has been approved already, because above it says the council is asked to approve the following authorised limit.
I don't.
We wouldn't be approving an 18-19 figure in February of 19, would we?
No, we wouldn't.
So do I take it that 96 has been approved?
It must have been. Yeah, otherwise we'd be breaching our indicators.
Yeah, I think that's fairly safe to say. We're not anticipating that changing.
Well, no, because it goes across the line.
Okay. That 96 million, is that inclusive of the HRA 81190?
At the moment, yes.
Is that inclusive of the cap? So is that 96 inclusive of the 87 million, which includes the 6 million cap?
I suppose the answer is sort of, but basically 96 million is the upper limit of what we would be expecting to borrow under our current plans, being the HRA capital plan and also the general fund capital plan. So 96 million is what we anticipate borrowing plus some headroom. So within that totality, there's what we borrow now in relation to the HRA, and a cap ahead of that. So basically the 96 million is to cover.
Allows for the cap. So what I'm saying is, if the cap was, let's just say we borrow to the full amount of the HRA cap. That means our borrowing limit then would only be £9 million. Because we just have to top out at 96.
Yes, that's what that says. At the moment, yes.
Yeah, at the moment, that's correct, yeah.
Okay.
That doesn't give us too much scope to go wild.
No. I just wanted clarification on that, because I just needed to be certain of what.
If that was going to change, it would have to come through and be approved. So it would, if we were to say, look, we're going to borrow another 70 million, the authorised limit would have to go up. By that amount, and it would have to be approved.
I know from the bullet point that we welcome the removal of the cap.
Yes.
Why do we welcome it? It doesn't actually say why we welcome that removal. I know it says the new freedom.
It gives us one of the things that we alluded to doing is actually setting up a housing company to borrow money to provide more affordable housing within the envelope of either the HRA, all right, or outside the HRA in the general fund. One of the things of borrowing in the HRA is that's why the government's done it, because they're trying to encourage people to borrow more, to put more affordable housing in. Now, one of the elements of that, or we're coming off track a little bit, but I will say, is that the right to buy our property, if we borrow 70 million to borrow right to buy a property, it's all right. We could do that, and in 5 years we find out people are being able to buy it. So we've got to be very, very careful what we're doing now. We're very cognizant of that, and that is why we may decide to try and borrow outside the envelope of the HRA, because then we don't have to, it isn't subject to HRA. But at the moment, we have no worked up plans for borrowing. We've got a housing company, but we haven't got specific details of what we're looking to do or anything like that. We haven't got any. We have some land, but we do not have a land bank where we can just wade in and start building houses.
Invariably, the most successful commercial models is when we use our power to borrow at incredibly good rates. Public sector loans board.
Yeah.
And we control the planning.
Yeah.
That combination. Yeah. Is a very compelling advantage in the marketplace.
It is.
Hugely compelling competitive advantage for the local authority in the marketplace.
It is, but the downside is that if we have to sell it at half the value of the property, so we're going to be very, very aware of that. Within reason, we will look at the, everything that is there will come forward, and those sort of things, which is not right to say it's obvious, but the more apparent dangers, it's actually almost being perceptive on the less apparent dangers that is the key to it all. The world's a big, still a big place, but even things like do we invest within the borough, do we go out to other places, all of this sort of thing will be taken into account. Now, if anybody can give me 100% certain it's going to work, come and talk to me.
No, okay, no appointment necessary.
Clarity on the
figures.
Thank you very much for that.
Okay, has anybody else anything else to add?
No.
No.
Okay, just to remind you then, the recommendations to Cabinet were that the capital strategy for 1920 be approved and recommended. I think we would recommend it, but I think we will add something in the report. But mention your concerns, Jeff, about the double borrowing.
Yeah, I think it's the governance around money. I think it's the governance issue. Treasury is quite tightly defined. It's if we use Treasury money outside, and then whatever the new vehicle is, and the governance around that.
Yeah.
So then make sure we're not borrowing against assets. Yeah. I'm sure we wouldn't want it, but other people might, and we might not want to.
I think just. This the capital strategy is actually part of the control over that. So at the moment we're, as hopefully we've got the impression, we're sort of developing what we want to do and feeling our way forward on a sort of case by case basis quite carefully. But I think in terms of borrowing, one reason, to be honest, your question is very interesting because it hadn't occurred to me we would do that. I think in reality we wouldn't do that because of what this sort of strategy shows and the borrowing strategy shows is we would look at things in totality. So one reason for putting a charge on a property that we own and borrowing against it is to make it cheaper, but as Parsons already said, we can get money very, very cheaply anyway through the Public Works Loan Board. So what we've looked to do is manage it on a portfolio, and the controls are around capital strategy, treasury management strategy, the capital plan, all of which should prevent me or some other rogue person borrowing, sort of going down to Barclays, borrowing £20 million against a property and then going off to Betfred with all Racing Post under our arm to sort of...
But
so we should do, so the whole framework should prevent us doing that. It's a very interesting question, though. So
But if I could just make a point, presumably if we're going to do a capital investment like that, it would have to come through the capital.
Yes, absolutely.
So it would be subject to the rules surrounding capital finance if it comes before the senior management team, cabinet, and everyone else, and the section.
When you align the capital strategy reporting with the treasury reporting to all the committee, so they'll come together.
The capital plan and the
capital strategy.
Capital strategy, because that's
the new document.
The capital strategy is a once a year document which encompasses or includes the treasury management strategy, and then that would come. The treasury management is sort of a more active thing that we would borrow against going forward. If we were going forward, it is logical if we have got loans or investments in commercial property that would come at the same time potentially with the capital plan. So I think there is a challenge in this is actually what the capital strategy is about. Well, I presume when the CIPA put the code together, which is about having a more holistic view of the whole thing and seeing how your investment and your asset management and your treasury.
It does say in there that scrutiny, they'll all come to audit.
Logistically, in terms of meetings and doing all the work for that, there is a challenge, but that is the intention.
Good.
And I just mentioned before we conclude, just a couple of small typos we need to alert Cabinet to. The one on page 127.
Oh, yes.
I think the table isn't in millions, it's in thousands. Otherwise, we'd have 2 billion with Liverpool City Council. Probably help them finance their Premier League campaign. And there's another one that's got a knot when it shouldn't.
I
highlighted it on there. Have you got those, Nadia?
Yeah, I have actually.
Have you highlighted it already?
There we go.
That's 2, 1, 2, 11.
I've made note of them somewhere.
Which is page 91.
I'll let you know.
Let Tina know. She can.
Page 91, was it? Yeah, I will do. That's
it. Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, I'm sure there's 127. We've got them.
Yeah.
It says at this point in time the council has taken any borrowing.
That's
an errant knot. Yeah, they're quite fundamental.
It is quite fundamental to report on page 91. 1, 2, 11.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the recommendation one. Recommendation two was that there's treasury management strategy, annual investment strategy, a minimum revenue provision policy be approved. and three, that the prudential and treasury indicators be approved. They're all part of the same document. So I think we can recommend that to Cabinet, subject to the couple of caveats we have. Okay then, next item is the...
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Cheers, Tom. Cheers, Tom.
Didn't do my usual trick of threatening you with a test at the end.
Okay, item 7, Chair. This is the report back from the items you considered at your previous meeting. They all went to Cabinet on whenever that was in January.
Yeah.
15th of Jan, I think, was that correct? So three items, and you recommended all three to Cabinet, and they, in due course, approved those items, including your considerations, which are set out really in the appendix. So nothing else to say about that.
No. Except the leader asked that his thanks be passed on to the group.
Okay.
Yeah.
The next item is the work programme. I think we said a little earlier that we have very little on the work programme. Now we have the standing items. We have just one item to discuss in March. It's all a little fluid at the moment because we have the elections coming up. And the structure of scrutiny may not be the same after that. So
your current programme is on page 136 and 137, and the items on 136 are all standing items. That's what you have on every agenda. So there's really nothing to discuss there. You'll always get those items, and then you'll see on the 11th of March there's an item that's been scheduled by the Scrutiny Management Board, which is the local development scheme. So that is something you've already been asked to look at by the Scrutiny Management Board. I won't go into the June ones because, as the Chair says, we may well have a different arrangement in place by then, so realigning the scrutiny programme. They'll end up somewhere, but but probably not. There won't be an OSG as it's currently configured. And then the forward programme is on page, well, starts really on 140 with the items that are going to come forward that are currently the key decisions. Yes. So starting halfway down on the 14th of March with Charnwood Grants. If I run through the March ones, if there's any there that immediately strike you, something you want to add to the work programme, you can do that now. Just for the benefit of Councillor Baines, you don't have to make a decision on these tonight. When the agenda's published, the Chair and Vice-Chair select any items that are published and just bring them here. So this is just advance notice of what's coming up next month. But you'll get a chance to do that 10 days before the meeting, same time next month kind of thing. So Charnwood Grants is a regular report as we allocate grants to community groups throughout the year. They come about every 3 or 4 months. This will be the last one of the current financial year. There's then a Children and Young People strategy, which is a refresh of the current strategy. Obviously starting in 2019, so from April, so that report has been to Policy Scrutiny Group, or that item, so you may wish to leave Policy Scrutiny Group's work and let it go straight to Cabinet. You then have a Housing, Income and Financial Inclusion Policy coming from Landlord Services. That's a one-off type report, it's not a regular thing. As you see, that's a five-year policy that's being submitted to Cabinet. The next item, revenues and benefits, future service delivery options. I've received today a request for a deferral of that item. So that will be on the Cabinet agenda, but not on March 14th. Yeah. You then have a quarterly capital plan amendment report. This is the regular update to changes in the capital plan, either sometimes new schemes being added, or revisions to existing schemes, usually in terms of timing and slippage and that kind of thing. That's a regular report. The annual procurement plan is the list of contracts below £500,000, which is a long list of tens, maybe not 100 items, but certainly tens of items that will be procured by services in 2019-20. Again, that's reviewed every quarter, and things are added to it as required. That's a standard report. Next, the Housing Capital Programme. That is the plan for 2019-20's housing stock investment. So that's probably something like a £5 million allocation of money to various housing activities such as new kitchens, bathrooms, that sort of thing. The local development scheme is the timetable. It's not the local plan, it's the timetable on which the local plan is being prepared. This is a statutory requirement. You've already got it scheduled for March. And then the business plan of the council, which is one of the key strategic documents that we produce, obviously is at the start of the year, setting out the key issues that are not business as usual for the council in 2019-20 to deliver what is now the final year of the corporate plan. Mm. That is it for March